Mary Kistler, curator and art historian, is with me now. How nice to talk to you. How are you going?
I'm extremely well, thank you, Kim.
Crikey, you sound better than you did last time we spoke.
Yep, I am.
Good.
It's called not working full time.
That's excellent.
Yes.
You are going to take us to art galleries and museums that are far, far away and that we can't dream of going to in person. Tell me where you are going.
Well, today we're going to go, first of all, to the John Paul Getty Museum in LA. But going onto these sites is like being Alice falling down, you know, the rabbit hole. You can go in so many different directions. And I was absolutely fascinated. I mean, they've got a very sophisticated website and they've got three main ways that you can explore it. So you can go into the actual gallery website itself, or you can use a link, which is artsandculturegoogle.com. And if people, these are all on their website. And if people have never used that before, it's absolutely fascinating because you can do sort of 3D tours of spaces in all of the museums around the world that have signed up to the project, and Auckland Art Gallery is one of them, and the Getty, of course. But they also use a tool called Explore It. The links are all there on the website. And that starts off outside. And, of course, with the Getty, it's such a sort of fantastic building, but more importantly, it's a remarkable garden, and it's a really like a desert garden. And so that sort of started me thinking. And then when I went into the and I have actually been there. Have you been there?
Yes, I have. You're talking about the Getty in
yeah,
LA.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And when I first went there, the gardens were only sort of half grown, but now when you go onto the website and use the Explore It tool, you can actually walk through parts of the grounds and that kind of thing. So I found that quite fascinating. It's slightly weird because if you're not controlling your mouse very well, you're suddenly flying up to the sky and, you know, rather drunkenly going left and right, which sort of then took me to two little exhibitions. You can go into the building, of course, do the virtual tour, but personally, I don't find those that satisfying because it's not like being in the real space, even though you can turn, you know, look at all the rooms and look at the skylight and all that kind of thing. But they had the only two little exhibitions that I could find through Explore It were two little shows that they had had in 2016, which were on medieval illuminations. And I thought under the present circumstances, I would not talk about the one that deals with death. I would talk about the one that's called Eat, Drink and Be Merry, Food in the Middle Ages and Renaissance.
Good.
Because, you know, on the radio this week, which I sort of listen to addictively, there's been a lot of comments, including yours just now, about all I kept thinking was, God, I hope the blood didn't get in the dough when you were slicing your bread. But, yeah, I think an electric carving knife, Kim, should just be put at the back of the cupboard where it probably was until you tried to experiment with it. I'm good enough at cutting myself with a real knife. But, if I was in charge of an electric one, no. Who knows what would happen.
It was because the crust was so hard.
Yeah, this is the problem with sourdough sometimes. Mm. Did you put a bowl of water in the oven to keep moisture in it?
No, but thanks for the tip.
Well, that's what a lot of people recommend if you don't have a steam, an expensive steam oven. If you put a little container of water in, the water evaporates and it's ostensibly stops the crust on the bread going too hard. Anyway.
I thought the crust was supposed to be hard, but nevertheless, thank you. It may save me from further embarrassing accidents.
Well, it shouldn't be so hard that you can't cut it.
It does somewhat
defeat the purpose,
seems
to me.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, had I got a chainsaw, I might have used that. So we're all lucky.
Yes.
Continue.
So back to the banquet at hand, what I discovered looking at the images in this little exhibition that's on the Getty is that it was based on a whole lot of illuminated manuscripts, sort of going through to the 15th and 16th century. And I became fascinated with how that sort of, you know, they often these manuscripts are meant to sort of tell a moral tale, but it's the detail that I find most fascinating. And there's one, for example, the memorable deeds and sayings of the Romans, but actually what the illumination is of is a banquet in the 15th century, you know, and it's sort of a moral and really a moral instruction to the woman who might read this on how she has to run an orderly house rather than a disorderly house. So, you know, in the background, you've got well-behaved people sitting demurely around a banquet. And in the foreground, you've got the servants all drinking far too much. They've obviously been on Zoom at 5 o'clock, 5 o'clock, Zoom, whatever they call it.
People can see that picture on our webpage. It's lovely.
There's a drunken maid servant holding up a dish of wine, but also lifting up her skirt. But what fascinated me was that you have a very upright little dog on the right looking at the scene and obviously as disapproving as the two people on the left. But what I also liked was you, your eye is led out the window into the landscape, and there's the village and the church and a manor house and a river. And I, you know, the first time I looked at this, I didn't see it, but there's actually a man on a horse and he's letting his horse lower his head and drink from the water. So that again sort of enhances that sort of moral notion. But moving on from that, they then had one, an image from the workshop of the Rohan masters, which is much more specific because it's actually about the medieval garden cycle and, you know, how important it was that you sowed your wheat at the right time. And this illumination shows a man sowing. He's got a lovely green cap. He's got a sheet over his shoulder with all the seed held in it. The rows have been tilled already, and he's walking along, scattering the seed into the rows. But he's also shown against the calendar, telling you when to plant. And I was listening earlier in the week to the program about the Maori calendar and, you know, planting by the moon and when is the right time to do things. And I thought, you know, they were doing this in the 14th and 15th century. So I found that really fascinating.
Who were the Rohan masters? This is from the workshop of the Rohan masters.
Who were they? Yes, most of these books of ours, and often they were done for women. They were books of the hours, which is the prayers that you say at the different times of day. Mm. But they were illuminated or illustrated by everyday scenes that were sort of that told you how to live your life. And, you know, we take images for granted now, but often for a woman, this was her only book. It was so important. And so when you get, for example, images of the Annunciation of the Virgin from about the 13th century onwards, she's often shown holding a book of hours. So it demonstrates that the owner is literate, that she can read, but also the hours and hours and hours of work that's gone on in a scriptorium to make these tiny little illuminations. And gold is used to highlight details. I mean, there's another one which from the same book, which shows a man reaping, which does give a whole page. And the marginalia is simply this sort of framework of climbing and winding plants and flowers, and you've got the text, and then you've got the little illumination, which is the picture set on the side. And there he's reaping with a very short tunic on and nothing on his legs, and you've got the lion above the head, his head, because that's the star sign, that's the month when you're meant to reap your crops. But in the marginalia you could often have images that are profane, not sacred, so people getting up to all sorts of mischief and little animals and things. But I was also fascinated, this is the rabbit, this is the Alice trick, because I'm reading Hilary Mantel's Mirror and the Mirror in the Light at the moment, and she's obviously looked at manuscripts because she keeps having Thomas Cromwell notice women embroidering violas or heartsease, and that's exactly what you've got painted in the tie in the margins of that particular scene.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it's the more you look in these little images, the more you see. But then they had wonderful links to more contemporary gardens. And you can go on this one site, five gardens you can virtually visit for the first in time for the first day of spring in England. And there's Waddesdon Garden and Chicago Botanical Gardens. But of course, there's also links to Monet's garden. And I immediately clicked on that because I've always been fascinated by that. And I've put all the links up. There's a very interesting little YouTube clip done by the Royal Academy curator Anne Dumas. And there's nothing like looking at a film of a garden to being there. And I was thinking about the sort of difference about looking at a film on screen and looking at a painting. And, of course, Monet buys this farmhouse. Well, actually, it was a cider press. And then he buys the land across the road and he creates this magical garden. And he creates it in order to paint. And there are some people who create gardens as if they are paintings. So they consider the shapes of the leaves and the textures and the contrasts and what plants create shadow and what plants allow light to bounce off the leaves. And that's exactly what Monet's done. And then there's another link to this beautiful work, because Monet only painted his garden once he moved there in the 1880s. That was his sole subject, really, for the rest of his life. But he constantly varies the way he paints. And when you look at that Princeton image, which has, you know, the famous Japanese bridge, you know, his main garden across the road was much more like an English garden, a sort of Gertrude Jekyll garden. But this, the lily pond, was influenced by Japanese prints, Japanese gardens. So you've got the bridge sort of cutting across the foreground, and you know, you've got the dabs of paint and the density of the willows and other trees in the background, and then the reeds growing up, and you can see he's used the brushes going up. But what really struck me this time was how he's painted the water. You know, you've got the lilies sitting in flat surfaces on the surface of the water, but he's absolutely gives you that sense of depth, but also the fact that the water between the lilies reflects the trees above. You know, he's absolutely looking so closely at, and yet if you go, and that's where if you go into the Google's Arts and Culture, you can click on these paintings and you can go in so close that you can see every brush stroke. And then the whole image disappears because it's the surface of the canvas.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's that contrast.
It's interesting you talking me through that picture, actually, because I've got it on a, what do you call it, a bench saver. I've got a tile of that picture on my bench at home. And, of course, I just take it for granted. So now I'm looking at it, I realise how gorgeous it is.
Yeah, well, but this is what's so exciting about these sort of projects, is that you get to look at things that you think you really know. But because, in a way, because I came to it through looking at a real garden, which was, you know, these other gardens, and then the film of Monet's garden, I looked at the painting in a different way. And it made me think again of the lovely work that we have on loan at Auckland Art Gallery of the Japanese bridge, which anyone can get hold of, you know, just going into Google. And he paints that much later in the last 6 years of his life when he's got cataracts. And it's almost a complete abstract. And yet it is the exact same scene. And then by clicking on that, I ended up going through to wonderful pictures, of course, of his garden. But I ended up with Van Gogh and one of the paintings of irises he did in the garden at the Asylum of San Remy. And in the year that he was there, before he committed suicide, he painted almost 130 paintings. But I'd never thought of this before. When you look at that painting, it's as if he's lying on the ground. The irises are rising up from the soil at his eye level. And I'd never thought about that before. He's, you know, they're painting at the same, you know, both start these paintings in the 1880s, but their handling is actually very different. And of course, what the commentator says about the Van Gogh painting is these really are botanical paintings. You know, if you look at them, every single iris is taken from a different perspective, just as they are on the real plant.
Yeah, they are.
Whereas Whereas that's not how Monet's looking at the way light
Yep.
is playing on the garden. And both of them are immensely satisfying in quite different ways. So, I love this little journey down the rabbit hole because I'm now going to go back. There are so many different sites to visit. But even just if you have a favorite artist, just go into Google and put that name in, and you will get links to thousands of sites.
All right.
It's
And people can do it that way. I was going to say, can you send us the links? But you don't need to do that. People can just go Google.
They just go into Google. There are thousands of them. You couldn't ever put them all down. But this is the thing. I think people will find their own. And if you put in gardens, I got the most brilliant site. There's one I'll talk about next week, maybe, or the week after, whenever I'm talking to you next. But there's I found another one this morning. I just put in artists' gardens. That's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. You get all from Monet onwards, you get all the contemporary artists' gardens as well. And maybe that's something we could talk about.
Let's do that. Thank you. Lovely to talk to you. Mary Kistler, who is, of
Thanks.
course, a curator and art historian. And as she said, you go Google and everything will come to you in the comfort of your own home.